The television in the studio has been stuck on HDTV for many days now, and I don't know where the remote is or who came in here and just fired on HDTV, no sound. It's just Property Brothers all day long. Austin, is this you? You're the guy that does hang around. Like, you're the one.
I think I found the remote, but
you're the
one
who is here for long stretches of time. And listen, I'm not judging, because you get into the HGTV wormholes and you can get stuck there, man. You can get stuck there. It's not personally my cup of tea as a non-homeowner, but I can understand it. But yeah, this has just been going on for the entire week, where I'm trying to start the show and I'm looking up and
it's HGTV.
I'm just seeing people knocking out walls and dreams becoming realities. Anyways, yesterday during the podcast with Benny, the Liv news broke. And we were legitimately reading media press release. We were reading, yeah, press releases on air. So for those of you that don't subscribe to the podcast, like, yeah, just do it, for God's sakes.
Missing out.
It's my favorite part. Anyway, we were just kind of reacting in real time, and it was big. And when stuff like that happens from time to time, especially stuff like this, where there was so much information to process, you just end up missing a lot. So I left yesterday, and basically the second I was outside of the studio, it just started to dawn on me all the bigger questions that were going to be asked as a part of this, and how big a story this is, man. That's the thing I can't get over is, you know, we watch movies like, what was the Will Ferrell basketball one where he wants to merge with the ABA? Semi-pro.
I'm blank.
Semi-pro, yeah.
There you go.
And, like, this used to be business, right? There used to be other sports leagues. And we've always heard, remember there was that little rumor at that one point in time with the NBA where some of the guys were going to try to start their own thing and they were at least considering it and blah, blah, blah. And you go, no, you're not. Shut up. Nothing's going to happen here. You're not going to other leagues. And golf, we basically did find out yesterday that there isn't room for two leagues. But the way that it happened is so, so unbelievable. This is 100% over the next couple of weeks going to be the story to monitor, is how these things came to be, who started to pull the strings, how it developed so quickly, why it developed so quickly. And someday there will be a Jay Monahan story, because this guy's last, whatever, 48 hours have got to be one of the most intense things. And it was, you know, that Game of Thrones episode where Cersei accepts that she has to, like, walk the shame bell thing. And she just knows that, hey, I got to get this over with so I can get on to the next phase. That's Jay Monahan right now. He's Cersei walking the square, and he's naked, and people are ringing that shame bell right in his face, and he's just stone cold walking right through all the people, walking through the peasant spit, walking through the tomatoes. He's just got one thing: get to the keep, baby, get to the keep. And the keep is just whatever the tour looks like essentially a year from now, however they can withstand this storm that they're currently in. He's just got to get to the next phase. Now, I think Monahan's a dead man walking. I can't imagine the tour keeping this guy on. I think he's getting the golden parachute. I think that part of this agreement, and this is just me guessing. Again, people know that I'm not the most hardcore PGA guy, but I soaked in a ton of information yesterday, and I've been thinking about it a lot. I just, watching him meet with the media over that conference call yesterday. Like, you guys all saw it? Did you guys all see it? Austin, Armin, like, him going, they ask him about invoking the 9/11 families and his previous thoughts on Saudi Arabia. And he's like, first of all, he dances around the question. And then he starts stammering about how, I was going with the information I had then, and now it's in new information, it's the time, and blah, blah, blah. And I know what I've said, and I know that I'll be called a hypocrite for what I said. And I was like, that's like the low end of things, Jay. I think that you know exactly what you're being called. He had to have known. He's too smart of a guy to have known that he was going to take it on the chin to this degree. And the powers that be, or the members of his board, the people that he serves, they all had to be in agreement that, yeah, he was essentially going to be the sacrificial lamb. Mm-hmm. He was, to do another television reference, he was going to be Tom going to prison, you know, where... Remember when they were like, you're the Christmas tree? Because like, everybody put hang something on you? That's also what I think Monahan has become here, is he's the face that's going to take all these bullets, and then the PGA will probably move on without him. I just don't know how you have a guy who disappeared for 2 years, essentially, did not do a lot of public facing stuff about Liv, let his top guys take the heat. Mm-hmm. Put Rory out there, put all these players out there, invoked, yeah, tragedy, 9/11, the surviving family members of the victims of 9/11, invoking their names mm-hmm. in order to guilt players and coerce the media's coverage of the LIV Tour, and then to come in here today and just be like, ah, things have changed. No, they haven't. No, it's the Saudi Arabian government, like, that is... They're still the same. The Royals still the same. That money is still the same kind of money. And so now the question has become, how does he survive this? I don't think he does, because I think his face attributed to all of these products is going to be a constant reminder. Plus, the players hate his guts, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. This is a very quiet sport. This is not exactly... It's a sport built around etiquette
yeah.
and manners. And you had players yesterday taking to Twitter and... doing what is the golf version of blasting the PGA Tour for announcing the thing that they, the way that they did it.
Yeah.
And you understand why, right? Because we all also watch Succession. They couldn't have the deal leak. They had to keep it close to the vest, and they needed to make sure that this wasn't going to get broken up on the 1 yard line by somebody who objected to this deal happening, because clearly it's an extremely controversial deal.
Yeah.
And there would have been people outside of the direct small party of decision makers that would have tried to get involved, stop it, leak it, whatever, and have other people have their say. Now no one has a say. It's yeah. just done. It's just done. It's over with. And now the next question is, after, well, Monahan will be settled in the future, because I was watching yesterday, there was a report that a PGA member stood up and talked about removing Monahan, and that he was given a standing ovation by players. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's going to be hard for this guy to overcome that.
Hard to overcome the standing ovation.
Yeah, I don't think that this is... I don't see a scenario where he's just good for the brand anymore. Mm-hmm. He's going to at some point have to take that golden parachute. How could you ever look at a guy again who is now going to be known for that clip, that 9/11 clip, yeah. and then backtracking off that? That's not something that you can come back from. No, I don't think so. So golf is just in tatters. They did this right before the U.S. Open, and I know the RBC Open too, and it's like the Canadian Open, but
yep.
let's be honest, I think that like Rory's there, but it's a pretty limited field, right? There's some good Canadians as always, but this isn't a field that's chock full of top 30 guys.
Right.
Not that I've seen anyways. But it's right before a premier event for the PGA. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Open is right around the corner. And now we have to see what the big dogs say. Like Rory McIlroy turned down $500 million. Tiger Woods turned down $800 million, according to some reports. There are guys on the tour right now. John Rahm. Justin Thomas. These guys probably all turned around, you know, somewhere to $100 to $300-ish million. Mm-hmm. And they're watching the LIV guys celebrate on Twitter going, you idiots, we got all the money. We're going to get to play in all the events. Now you're stained with the same things that we are. You have a media group that just spent years spending time lobbing grenades, including Jay himself, which is why so much of this is so bad, taking the moral high ground. And now you're all just arm in arm with the Saudis yeah. and they're a partner to you. It's ugly, man. And I don't know how... golf is obviously going to survive this. And I know that there are a lot of golf fans even listening to this right now that are like, shut up, JD. I just want to watch the best players compete and I don't care. And, oh, I wasn't under the impression that all these guys were good guys anyways. Like, no, man, this is different. You're not going to be able to separate this now from the tour for quite some time. Eventually you'll get by. Eventually it'll be like, you know, different owners of sports franchises that are awful. But for the near future, this is really going to be a dark cloud over the sport. And it is fascinating to me to see some of the like media members and some of the tour members that took such vociferous stances now have to enter this reality with the Saudis and with this money and knowing like they didn't even get it. And how much does the PGA pay these guys? How do they pay these guys? What happens to the middle class of golf as a whole new crop of guys comes in here? Like, you have to figure that this happened because of a couple of reasons. One, the antitrust lawsuit, which is also hilarious that this is, ends up being the result, because that's the way that this stuff goes. There's an antitrust lawsuit between LIV and the PGA, and the PGA might have to open up their books, but what ends up happening in an antitrust lawsuit is you get another monopoly. Hooray. So who's looking into that? They clearly didn't want to have this continue to be a story. They clearly could not continue to just hand out these massive purses to the PGA players and pay these new salaries and, yeah, give all these guys extra money without having some of the better players that were there at some of these tournaments. Makes you feel like the PGA was hurting a little bit more than they originally let on when these guys were starting to, you know, say, it's fine, LIV can go do their own thing. Mm-hmm. But now they got to figure out the money with the players. And boy, oh boy. It's funny because I'm going to get really disappointed. I don't think Tiger says anything overly meaningful because, again, he needs to preserve the tour, whatever. But I can't wait to hear Rory McIlroy talk. Like, they put him out there for a year being the face of piety. And now he's here completely shocked as Jay Monahan stabbed him in the back and he's got to try to answer for basically everyone as to how they're feeling, except for he's not everyone. He's a guy who, again, turned down $500 million.
Half a billion.
So if I'm him, I'm showing up going, where's the money? The money, please. Anyways, I'll obviously be talking, delving more into this week, but I am just really fascinated at what happens to Jay, what happens to golf, and yeah, what happens to some of these players as they try to embrace their new reality. Know that this is the only way that it, like, this is the way that it is. It's been decided for you. There is no pushback. My boy, Ben Nicholson-Smith, I think he was on the line for a good little chunk of that. Now he's caught up on golf at the letters, senior writer for Sportsnet. Good morning.
Hey, JD, I am caught up on golf. That actually sounds pretty intriguing. So, and that's not something I often say about golf. So,
exactly.
So nicely done.
Well, the thing is, too, the one interesting thing about golf right now was that you had good guys versus bad guys at these major events. And now that's gone, they're all the bad guys. It's just
there's nothing like villains are just the best. Anytime you have a villain, like when Aaron Judge, when everyone thought he was cheating for those few days.
Yes.
Like, it's just so fun when you have a good villain in sports.
I know, man. And that's the thing is that unfortunately with this, it just saps out so many fun narratives and it just makes it, what it is, which is cold-hearted business with people who have, you know, millions and billions of dollars on the line. And at the end of the day, they don't really care who they're in bed with as long as the checks keep clearing. And that's what we got here. That's the story. We can break it down into all these machinations with Jay Monahan and all these different figures and whatever it is. It's like, all this is capitalistic greed and the fact that, they want to continue to up their profits. They want to continue to be able to pay bigger purses and grow. And the only way forward for them was to take blood money, a bunch of people who are trying to legitimize a state that should not be legitimized. And that's what the PGA Tour has done. So congratulations to them. Congratulations to all of us, because we are, anybody who even has a passing interest in golf is a huge loser here. Okay. So, Jay's win yesterday, tidy stuff from a guy who gives up a home run on the first pitch of the ball game where I go, oh no, not this. You can't have this. And then he settles in and Gossman's brilliant and the Jays end up taking one, but we got to start with Manoah because they dropped that bomb before the game. And I texted you. I went, I didn't even know this was on the table. I just assumed that Buffalo. Like, are they going to send him down to Buffalo? Why did they decide to send him to rookie league team, which is as low as he can go?
Yeah, it is the lowest rung of professional baseball, really. It's the complex league. This is where you have short season baseball guys who are just beginning their professional careers. So those will be the first opponents that Alek Manoah faces. Once he goes through some physical testing, mechanical testing, and this is part of the reason that he's down in Florida, is because they have their big player development complex down there in Dunedin. So he will go there with David Howell, one of the Blue Jays coaches, a guy with a driveline, a background at Driveline and other places. And they'll work really closely just to get a sense of where Manoah is physically and mechanically. Then from there, the next step likely would be to get him into games. And there's probably some appeal to the idea of getting him in where there is the lowest of low pressure. I mean, we'll see the box scores, but there won't be cameras. There won't be a lot of fans. Like, it's basically a friends and family crowd in Florida in June. And that's where he's going to start this process of trying to get back to being an impact big league starter.
So that makes sense. Like, it makes sense for a lot of different reasons. You've got your complex down there. You've got a ton of resources. It can be a little bit more private. Yeah, you would like to think, though, that, okay, again, it makes sense, but only if it's basically the worst case scenario, which is that you're dealing with a multitude of factors here that you can't really diagnose, right? Like, if he's got one thing wrong with a mechanic, then it's like, okay, fine, send him to Buffalo because he can work on that and it's lower leverage and he can continue to pitch through. It's why I was surprised they didn't just leave him in there the other day. I thought, man, just leave him, let him, the game's over, essentially. It's 6-0. Let him pitch. Let him try to fight his way through it. Let him go out on a positive note. Don't bring him out of here with just one out. And then you go, well, if there's a huge mental component to this, then yeah, you kind of have to save him so that he's okay. I don't think that one extra, you know, run tacked on there, a couple more pitches would break a spirit like Alek Manoah's. But no, you do have to be considerate with your players and you don't want bad blood to develop. But it does feel like to me, we're basically balancing three potential things that all might be happening at once, that it isn't just one thing. It could be that his conditioning needs to improve and his ability to work with the pitch clock, and how those two things are related, we've never been really sure. It's been a lot of speculation, but it seems at least plausible, especially given, yeah, what's been out there. Two is that, yeah, there's some mental stuff that he's working through with his confidence. And three, that it is mechanical as well. Like, is your impression that it's like all of those three things are going to be worked on as he's down there?
Yeah. Yeah. I think everything is on the table. I think all of those aspects, if you're looking to get the best hitters in the world out consistently and do it in October when the stakes are highest, I think that all of those aspects are areas to look at. And you know, I don't get the impression that the Jays think there is one single issue here that's easily identifiable. I mean, for example, if he was tipping his pitches, then you can solve that in the major leagues between starts in one bullpen session. If he was, you know, not getting enough, you know, he's opening up too early in his delivery, and it's just that, and everything else is perfect. The velocity's there, but he's opening up too early, and that's leading to misses on the glove side. I mean, that's something that maybe it's a bit more of a long-term or medium-term fix, but it's identifiable. I think what we're seeing here is there's so many things going on, and the velocity's down, the movement on his pitches is down, the results obviously aren't there. We've seen him and heard him talk about the effect it's had on him mentally as well, so you know that's a component, of course, as it is for all these guys as they go through the ebb and flow of a season. So it's just a lot going on, and part of the process that's going to happen this week in Florida is just trying to understand physically and mechanically, where is he at from a strength and mobility standpoint?
How long do you think he's down there?
At this point, it's an open question. Like, I'd be surprised if he's down there for less than a couple of weeks. But I mean, if he's pitching in a AAA game on June 28th, that wouldn't seem weird to me.
Yeah, because that was the thing I thought was the next step that we maybe didn't spend enough time discussing, or I didn't see, because it was like such shocking news, right? It's like, okay, what's happening here? What's happening here? What's happening here? And I thought, well, how do you get out of this? Because if it is all of those different factors, that's a lot to sort out in a month, you know? And at what point do you start, exposing him to batters that aren't, at again, the lowest rung of baseball? Like, I don't know how much information you're going to get outside of working on that conditioning And yeah, seeing the actual break of the pitches or the way that his delivery is looking, whether he can get that velocity up on the radar gun. But yeah, eventually he's going to have to go through AAA, right, before he comes back to the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I think so for sure. And I think like it's really not that you want to go too much off results, but it really will be interesting to see, you know, how he fares in these complex league games once he starts pitching, because, you know, honestly, the way he's been pitching to this point, especially recently, the last few starts, it's not really a combination of pitches and stuff and command that you would project to do well really in most professional settings, because he has had so much trouble getting ahead of hitters. And that's really the root of this. Mm-hmm. He needs to be ahead in more counts.
So do you have any idea as to how much he was actually consulted on this? Like how much he was involved in the decision here, because it is such an odd one, right? Like this isn't just a demotion to AAA to go work on your stuff. This is like, hey, we're sending you essentially to, the mountains to go work with the master. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, this is such a strange and unique thing that the Blue Jays are doing that I wonder what his involvement was.
Well, John Schneider said he was upset to hear the news. Mm-hmm. Alec Manoah has known that this is not going well, and he's known that there is some work that needs to happen. What form that took was always going to be an open question. If we were having this conversation this time yesterday, I probably would have raised the possibility of, hey, could he go on the Phantom IL? And the difference between being optioned and the Phantom IL is, you know, among other things, he's not getting service time. Because he's not on the major league roster. And this is a player who, this is a point shy of Edie made last night when he and I were talking in the press box. But, if this lasts for a few weeks, this could impact his schedule for arbitration eligibility. So he might no longer be arbitration eligible at the end of this season. And of course, in baseball, that can be a swing of millions of dollars. So, I don't think that's foremost on his mind. But this is a guy who wants to contribute to a major league team. I don't think his dream is to contribute to a Florida complex league team. And, you add on to that, he's removed from a major league setting. Yeah, I think it makes sense that he probably wasn't too thrilled with this.
Yeah. Okay. So then this isn't collaborative, because I wondered if it was, hey, he's telling the team that he doesn't think it's something that he's working out in AAA. He also does get to have the opportunity to go home. It's just such a stark contrast with the guy he is, right? Where he's one of the biggest competitors on the Jays. Like, even I was kind of, I don't know the way I was interpreting it yesterday, but I watched his post game, or I read Shai's piece from the other night, and he's outlining what happened with the seven batters that he put on right in that Houston game. And he's like, yeah, I thought I threw a good pitch here, and this one's a bloop, and this one's this. And I'm like, okay. To a degree, this just does show you the confidence that this guy has. He's like, okay, I might be shaken when I'm out on the mound, but he obviously cares deeply. He loves the craft. One of my favorite things about Alec Manoah is that he's a throwback player, in the sense of, I don't think that he cares about too much outside of baseball. Like, there's a reason why he wants to be a correspondent on MLB Network. There's a reason why when the Jays get bounced, he's watching games and still doing radio appearances. And, the reason why he's on Twitter interacting with different baseball accounts is that this guy's not trying, like other players, to, launch fashion lines and get involved in other businesses as a front-facing person. Like, baseball is his thing. And that's going to be the fascinating thing to watch here is, how well he takes this. Like, how patient can he be when he doesn't have a track record of someone who is obviously not, he's never had to be patient, man. He's been dominant everywhere forever. Like, I can't, who knows when Alec Manoah has ever struggled? Like, what, when he was like 13, 14? Like, what, do we have even a sense of an idea of when he last struggled in his baseball career? He's been a force, like at the collegiate level, at the AAA level, here with the Blue Jays. And so, yeah, I am kind of curious what it's going to look like for him, where he's at like the Fortress of Solitude, where we're getting these like tiny little updates, but we don't really understand what they mean, and how hard he's going to be pushing to get back here, and whether they have to basically figure out like when is too soon for him. It's really, really interesting, man.
It is. And I agree. I think he loves the game of baseball. Even just, talking to him about facing like great hitters in the game. He gets a kick out of facing Miguel Cabrera, having grown up in Miami, or he gets a kick out of facing Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout. Like, he really I think appreciates that. And you know, like you said, like he's an MLB Network correspondent, because it's fun for him. He likes having fun with the game of baseball, and obviously it took a turn. It's no longer as fun as it was. This season's been incredibly challenging for him. Mm-hmm. But I think too, like, it's interesting, you look at, and this is a point Chris Bassett made in conversation with Hazel May on our pregame show yesterday. But, you know, it's interesting, you look at some of the guys on this Blue Jays staff, some of the pitchers on this staff, and, you know, Kevin Gausman in 2019, like, which wasn't that long ago, Kevin Gausman was DFA'd. He was on waivers. He was picked up by the Cincinnati Reds at that point. And that's only 4 years ago. And now Gausman is like an undisputed one of the best five or six pitchers in baseball. And same with Chris Bassett himself, who you look back at his transaction log, Chris Bassett has been optioned not once like Alek Manoah has. Chris Bassett has been optioned 14 times in the major leagues. Like, mm-hmm. this happens to really good pitchers. And, you know, this is an extreme case. I'm not trying to say otherwise, but it's possible for Manoah to recover here.
Yeah. I will say that there, for him, the weird thing is that there doesn't appear to be like any injury, right? Like, we haven't heard of some kind of a, like, whenever people do the Ricky Romero comparison, I'm like, yes, Ricky definitely went through it mentally and Ricky fell off, but he also dealt with, what was it, two knee surgeries and something with his arm? I can't remember exactly because it was a long time ago, but yeah, his body was starting to work against him. And yeah, with Manoah, we don't really have a clear idea of what that is. Yes, pitchers go up and down. It's just weird to see a guy that has been so dominant and so good, yeah, have this happen to him, like after two full seasons, essentially, of being an ace and being Mr. Confidence. And that's why I wonder, too, with this, like part of the reason that he's in Florida and part of the reason that he's just, you know, completely sent away is, I have to imagine that for a guy like him who has had so much success right away, who's been someone who stands at the, you know, in the top of the dugout and likes to mix it up with people, who is one of the big personalities in all of baseball, who is unafraid to talk about Gerrit Cole, right? Calling him the biggest cheater in yep. the game. Like, all of the attention that you call to yourself is awesome when you're leading, you know, when you're at the front, it's incredible. But I have to believe that there's at least a weight to this on Alek Manoah of, oh my God, everyone's looking at me all the time and I called all this attention to myself. And frankly, I don't envision a lot of players around baseball who have been bothered with the way that he comports himself rooting him on. So like, I wonder if there's just a feeling amongst like his peers and the fans and the media and everything that, yeah, Manoah has placed on himself that they look at and say, we need you to keep this personality. We need to keep you this, but also you're going to have to let go of some of the ego stuff in order to take a step forward.
And the challenge for Manoah, I mean, among many other things, is just mentally staying focused on where he's at himself. Because
right.
it could be easy to get pulled in those different directions and start thinking about, you know, what about that MLB Network spot? And should I have done, you know, should I have made that comment about Gerrit Cole? Really, this is the time for him to narrow his focus. And maybe that's part of the appeal of the Florida Complex League setting, is just to get back to the basics of... Mm-hmm. All right, your job is not to worry about headlines. It's not to worry about TV networks. It is simply to worry about executing this pitch, frankly, better than he was in the major leagues. And, you know, that might mean more velocity. That might mean a quicker pace to get used to the pitch clock. It might mean better. It's definitely means better command and more pitches in the strike zone, more competitive pitches. I mean, how many times this year, just to, you know, get back to some of the on-field stuff, how many times this year have we seen Manoah miss like 2 feet in the right-handed hitting batter's box mm-hmm. or spike breaking balls that land 2 feet in front of home plate? And those are just non-competitive pitches. It doesn't matter if it's 0-2 or 1-2, no hitter swinging at that. So he needs to be around the zone more, even when he's not in the zone. And, you know, a lot of that is going to be front of mind for him. And hopefully that's where the focus is and it's not on, you know, all of the distractions that can surround a major league environment.
So I will say this, though, about Manoah. Because of his story and because of his rise and just from conversations I've had with him and just observing him since he became a Toronto Blue Jay, I don't want to diminish this because, yeah, it can be, I'm sure he's in a hole right now and it's going to be really hard for him to climb out of it, and that all those mental pressures that I talked about are very real. But I just think he's strong. like he is mentally strong and that he will find his way out of that part of it. Like once he starts to see results, the confidence with a guy like him is never going to go away. I think that we will see Alek Manoah again, you know, carry himself the way Alek Manoah has here, which is the big barking guy who, you know, is backing up his teammates and, you know, talking. Like, look, man, he was, what was it, the Baltimore game where he was yapping at guys? Like, and this is in the middle of his struggles. I just think he'll find his way back to that. The part of it that's difficult is when we make all these comparisons to other pitchers who have struggled, right, and who have fallen off and who have come back and, you know, the Gossmans or what's the guy in Texas right now that was a stud with the Braves and then fell. I can never say his name. It's Mike Fulton.
Fultonavich.
There we go. Yeah, I was going to say, I can't say his name. it's a mental blocker for me. We never had a guy with the pitch clock do this before. Like, this is the first year of pitch clock impact on guys like this. And so when we're using precedent, it can be a little hard because it really does feel as though this is a major component for him, that he does seem sped up at times. And this goes back to the preseason. He was pretty vocal about it, and it's just extended into the year. And that's the part of this that I feel like is the easiest thing to identify, but also is not something that you're going to be able to change in one season. And that's, yeah, how do you get someone accustomed to that? And how quickly can you get their conditioning in a place where they're better prepared for it? I just, that's the part where I go, well, if we're doing this from a timeline standpoint, if that's what this is, if this is a major part of it, then I don't think that you can be relying on him again at any point again this season as any semblance of himself.
Well, yeah, certainly no guarantees. And definitely creates a lot of questions for the Jays starting as soon as Saturday when probably Bowden Francis, maybe a bullpen game, mm-hmm. you know, so they have some real questions there. But as for the conditioning aspect and the pitch clock aspect, like I think, you know, every major league player, the better shape you're in, the better, you know, it's a long season. There's a lot of taxing forces mm-hmm. on these players, on their bodies. So, you know, that applies to everyone from, you know, your Julio Rodriguez's and your Bobby Witt Jr.'s to take any player. It always helps to be in better shape. But at the same time, you know, with Manoah, I just like if he was getting through the first and second innings, no problem, and then running into issues in the third and fourth, then maybe I would point to that a little bit more. But it's really from the jump. And I think, you know, to some extent, this is an issue of his stuff just not being there. Like we're not seeing him, you know, 95, 96 with a biting slider at 89. We're seeing him 91, 92 with a slider that's lost effectiveness. Hitters are hitting .328 against it with a .600 slugging percentage this year. Not good. Not what you expect. So, you know, the stuff itself is not there. And I think that leads to, and look, I'm not a pitching coach. I'm not a sports psychologist. But I think that could lead to a little bit more pacing between pitches if you know that the pitches themselves are not moving as much.
Yeah, I don't know. You don't have to be a pitching coach or this is how all sports work, especially with high level mechanics, is that one thing begets the next thing. Like all of a sudden you have to change something and you don't feel as comfortable. And then it starts to get in your head. And then you start trying to remember how you used to do something. And it's just like, yeah, it all falls apart. Like anybody who's played any sport at any level knows how this stuff works. It's obviously far more complicated for Alek Manoah, but yeah, those of you that golf, like you should know this. You try to make a swing adjustment, it starts to work, you feel great. Goes against you, and yeah, everything, your confidence starts to break down, nothing's operating the same way. By the way, Jobo just put this in our doc. I don't know what this means. Yeah, Manoah's pitch tempo was 17th slowest in the majors last year with bases empty. Okay, so that might be something to do with the start of these games where he looks like he's struggling and just trying to deal with that pitch clock. Okay, so I asked this question to Ennis yesterday, and part of the reason I had you on today is I knew you would humor me with this.
Let's hear it.
Well, if the Jays don't have Alek Manoah, are they contenders?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
do you disagree?
Yeah, like I don't think they have a hope in hell to win. Like
really?
No,
really?
No chance.
I don't think they're in a good spot. Like, no. I mean, the way the Rays have played, like, obviously, you know, Plan A is starting to look pretty distant because Tampa's so good. But, you know, I think they're still contenders, like, for a wild card. And then who knows?
No, hold on. Playoffs, they're going to be contenders to potentially get in. Like, if we remember the last year against Seattle, there was so heavily predicated on them being favorites. Like, it wasn't Rogers Center because Toronto could have gone down to Seattle and had home field advantage there, too. It was, you have these two pitchers that are dominant. And I love seeing Varsho turn it around right now. Like, he's looking like a guy that is starting to, like, man, if you want to have optimism about Manoah finding his confidence and how it's like, yeah, man, Varsho was in the dump of all dumps and starting, he was like flirting with Mendoza line for his entire Jays tenure. His OPS was, you know, falling around the 600 range. And yeah, now the guy's just ripping a baseball every single game, like getting really, really hard contact and just looks like himself, or looks like I think he's supposed to look anyways. I didn't watch a ton of Arizona games. But I just don't see an offense that's going to be particularly special. I think it can be good. I don't think it's going to be like 2015 or the identity of the team. And I see a bullpen that has some decent guys, and I like Swanson and I like Romero, but I don't think that they're going to be like, you know, the Cleveland team that beat Toronto in 2016. And then I look at the starters and I say, yeah, there's guys here that can pitch, but man, their real identity outside of having Vladdy and Bo potentially turn into superstars, and I'm getting started a little, you know, it's getting harder to see that sometimes with Vladdy, was to have these two aces at the very top that, you know, gave you the chance to hold teams to three or fewer every single playoff game. And now you remove that guy from the mix. And it's a couple things. One is just like what that does for the back end of your rotation, where now all of a sudden it's Bowden Francis. And like, we can talk about him, and the highlight clips that you guys threw up in the broadcast yesterday made me feel like a little optimistic in his numbers and just how he looks. But yeah, it's hard for me to envision taking out one of a team's most special players and thinking like, yeah, they're still going to find a way to win a World Series, especially when like they don't have the resources to really. Like, that's the fascinating part of this is, like, what the hell do they do? Like, where do they pull from to try to address this? Because, like, they don't have anybody in the cupboards that they can move for another starting pitcher, and they don't want to block Manoah's path back. So it kind of feels like they're just going to live with the Bowden Francis of the world or whatever until he can either get back here or, worst-case scenario, they get to the deadline. And, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where they go from there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I think you have to try to upgrade over the Bowden Francis option at this point. We'll see how long that takes, if they're able to do it. Obviously, trade talks are happening now, but they aren't really at a breaking point. So typically, it's tough to add those type of pitchers now. Mm-hmm. And I think you do need an arm to help you get through the next 4 months. I think there's no doubt about that. But I think if they can get to the playoffs, I actually think you're totally fine rolling with a Gausman, Bassett, Berríos, 1-2-3.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's actually pretty good, just the way Jose Berríos is pitched. So I think that's a great spot for them to be in. Offensively, they need more. I think they need another bat. I think they're short a really good offensive player of some kind, maybe an outfielder to mix in there and just contribute DH, maybe a little second base, whatever the case. So I think they're going to need a bat. They're obviously going to be looking for pitching at the trade deadline, as they are every single season. But I think if they can get there, I think even without Manoah, and of course he could still come back, he could still be good. But I think that Gausman, you know, again, one of the best pitchers in baseball, Bassett, he's been incredibly consistent. He goes tonight. That should be a good matchup here in Toronto. And then Berríos has really stepped up. So I actually think you're fine if you can get there. But, you know, at this point, they're on an 89 win pace. That's not great. It's not good enough to necessarily even be there. So they have a lot of work to do before they can get to that point.
Yeah, that's step one. And you're right. Once you get in the playoffs, the support is very conducive to whatever team gets hot there at the right time. It's like there's a real hockey element to it, right? Like pitching and goaltending kind of just being very, very similar in that regard. But yeah, that's the other part of it, man. You go into a deadline where it already felt like this team had things to add. Like, I still think that they could use another velocity bullpen arm, like, you know, the entire time they've ever existed, essentially. Maybe that ends up being the Yankees guy. I'm blanking on his name, Chad Green. Maybe he steps in here and he's all right and he helps out that position, but I don't think the offense is good enough. They would definitely want to upgrade on that. And then you add starting pitching who, you know, like, that's not cheap to add starters, even if it's just guys who can give you innings. Like, that's a commodity around baseball that everybody wants. And then you start looking at what Toronto has to offer these teams for all this different stuff that they might want to add to their group. And I say, well, where are they getting this from? Like, what are they going to be able to offer a team in a trade? Because, I this prospect, this farm system better than I do, but Like, I don't know what Aroldis Martinez's value is anymore. It seems like it's diminished quite a bit. And this was a guy who was already a polarizing prospect heading into the season. And, like, nobody else has, like, drastically emerged. Even if they wanted to all of a sudden open up the idea of a Ricky Tiedemann for something huge, like, he's been hurt. So you're trading him at a diminished value. Like, I don't know where they go with some of the things that they need to address. And so that scares me. And then this was my kind of ultimate thing. This is where a lot of this was leading. If they don't, you know, if they stay at this 89 win pace and they're sort of just kind of fighting around it, do you think that they would even entertain the idea? We're 2 months away from this. This is why it's kind of foolish to even be bringing it up. And I know, I get it. But do you think that this group would even entertain the idea of a step back to take a step forward?
Well, wow. Okay. So just real quick on the prospect stuff. Totally agree. On Tiedemann, you're not going to get much. You can't trade him right now. You just can't. And then Aroldis, I actually think Aroldis would have real value. It's 15 homers. And he's showing game power that's difference making. So I think he would. I think the Jays might want to keep him because, you know, they have a pending vacancy at third base starting pretty soon. So, you know, that's something to think about. As for the discussion about where this team is at, the record will tell us what's going to happen. I mean, I think that if the Jays are around 500, if they're six games above like they are now, they're going to be buying. They're going to look to add. This is a team that's obviously in the midst of a window. They've got Bo, they've got Vlad, they've spent big. The fans are into it. This is, of course, they want to win. That is the plan. That's almost for sure what's going to happen. But, you know, if they go on a 2-8 skid and they fall to below 500 and they can't get back above 500 and it all goes sideways, yeah, I mean, of course, you have to play the hand in front of you. And so at that point, you start to look at what the expiring contracts are. And yeah, obviously, you know, would they entertain the idea on pending free agents? And obviously, Matt Chapman is the big name there. You have to. If you're five games below 500 at the deadline, you have to do that. But I think this team will be five games above or 10 games above, and I think they'll be buying.
So they'll be right there in the middle. They'll be right there. That's why I said it's Raptors-ish. This is what I said it was Raptors-ish yesterday. It's like, just feels like they're going to be kind of in the no man's land where you go, listen, we can't really sell because we could win. It's not likely we do. And so you roll over some assets in a free agency and you run the risk of losing guys like Chapman for nothing, Kiermaier potentially for nothing. And yeah, I think that's a dangerous position for a team to be in when, yeah, the cupboards are like pretty bare right now. And yeah, like it's good to hear that Aroldis is hitting those bombs. I just, from what I've heard from prospect people, is that he's not a guy for everyone because of just, yeah, what they think the volatility of the prospect is. Like, could really hit, but maybe not. And yeah, around baseball, he's just a guy that, yeah, some people are really high on, some people are pretty low on.
For sure. And I think, like, this is going to really test my depths here, JD, because anytime I start talking about a sport that's not baseball, I run the risk of just embarrassing myself.
Let's do it. Didn't work out for Raptors, you
want to know. So my sense on the Raptors, correct me if I'm wrong, my sense on the Raptors was that, yeah, maybe they're going to make it in. They made it to that play-in game, but they were never going to make it. They were never going to win the NBA Finals.
No.
Like, it was just never going to happen.
No.
And whereas for the Jays,
they could win.
They really could. And I'm not, again, I'm like, this is a flawed team. They need to improve it, et cetera, et cetera. But like, yeah, of course they could still win. Like Gausman is great. Like you get a good run from Bassett, a good run from Berríos. Your hitters are hot at the right time and you have some health. Yeah. Like that's a pretty good team. So they actually could, like, a wild card to the Jays means more than a wild card to the Raptors.
No, it does. Again, this is the big flaw with this idea, is that the sports are so drastically different. Like, anybody that gets into the MLB postseason is really alive. The way that I'm kind of interpreting it though, is that I think a lot needs to break for Toronto to win a World Series this year. Like, if you look at the teams above them, they're strong. Like, they're really good. And I even look at that Baltimore team, and I don't think this is anything fraudulent with Baltimore. It's going to be really interesting, too, for a team that took a big step back last year and decided to sell pieces, which actually worked out for them as well. Like, God, they're just kissed by God right now in terms of the things that they do. But just where Baltimore's at and the potential for them to add and all of the things that they have in the cupboards to offer up if they want to make a big splashy addition or two. Yeah, this, the fact that the Yankees are ahead of you and that they also seem to have just an infinite depth of movement and salary to spend, and that the Rays are so damn good. And it's like, what's the thing the Rays need this time around? It's like bullpen guys. Like, they could use a couple of bullpen arms, which they'll be competing with the Blue Jays for, but also, man, their team's going to be pretty damn nasty if they can add a couple of cheapo guys for some prospects that probably don't end up working out. Like, the three teams above you are extremely good. And I even think, like, the Astros still hovering around here with guys who are going to come back from injuries. And then the step the Rangers took, like, the American League is really competitive. It is a damn good, it's not just the division this time around. It's not like, yeah, the Central sucks. It always will. But right now, there are, I would say, five other very good teams in baseball. And that's before the team that knocked you out last year has started to really turn it up too, right? Who is also eyeing, you know, deadline acquisitions and has a lot of pressure to do something too. So where the Jays are is just like, they feel like the upper middle class of baseball. They don't feel to me like a team that is like right there with the rest of those teams. And the additions I feel as though that they would need to make would be too costly. Like, they take them out of the mix. And so I feel like what you're going to end up with is a deadline where they go, yeah, we're going to take away more prospects and add more like Whit Merrifield types and more, you know, Adam Simber plus types and roll the dice from there and go, oh, all right, that's fine. It's all right. But it just might be better for them in the long run to look at them realistically, like the Raptors should have, and said, hey, listen, we have guys that we don't think are going to be here in the future, like Matt Chapman's. We can still hang around this playoff spot. Maybe we just need to make sure that we put ourselves in a better position to still try and compete this year, but also explore the idea of trying to find that like middle ground where next offseason, all of a sudden there's a little bit more in the cupboards and we can make a better pivot going into a year where we've still got that window happening. Like, don't turn the window into 1 year when, yeah, it doesn't look like you're front runners for the window. I love pushing all the chips. Like, 2015 with the Blue Jays, when they pushed all in, like, I had zero problem with it. I would have a bit of an issue if the Jays were only, like, four games above 500 and they're moving, you know, Aralvis Martinez or another guy that's actually, you know, showing some promise for them so that they could get, like, another, you know, like, one of those types. Look at what happened to them with the trade already. The what's his name? Mitch White. Like, boy.
Frosso. Yeah.
You sure would like to not have that.
I think at the same time, like, you know, you look at, okay, what's like the worst prospect the Jays have traded away, like, during the last, I don't know, seven years?
Yeah.
Or sorry, like, what's the worst trade? Like, what's the one that you'd want to have back the most? I mean,
you know, Rosso trade, because I don't know even where Mitch White is. Like, this injury happens to Manoa, or this thing happens to Manoa, and I'm like, where's Mitch White? Like, his name isn't even, like, where is he, Ben? His name wasn't even, there was like, they went Casey Lawrence and Bowden Francis and Zach Thompson, and I went, what about the guy they traded for who was supposed to do this job? Where's the new middle guy? He's just gone. Totally. Like, is he employed by the team? Where is he?
That trade looks like a miss, but I'm just kidding. The Cardinals who traded away, you know, Adolis Garcia and Randy Rosarena. It's not that bad. You look at, not to be a Jays apologist here, like, they need to have more depth. They need to go out there and of course, like, yeah, like, a lot of things would need to break right for them to even make the playoffs, let alone for them to win the World Series. But the same can be said of the Tampa Bay Rays. The same can be said of Atlanta or of the Dodgers. A lot of things need to break right for anyone to win the World Series. And it's going to break right for someone. Someone's going to win the World Series in 2023. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you get yourself closer to that goal if you're the Jays by trading away Matt Chapman. Now, again, if they're under 500 by seven games, do it. Trade them. But, you know, we're so far from that point. And I think,
the under 500 by seven games, this took a like steep hit for you. It's like they're around 500. Yeah. I was like, if there's seven games on, I was like, that's not happening. So we're good.
but if they're around 500, I wouldn't do it. If they're like, because you got to take your shots in this league, you got to take your shots at winning. And, you know, realistically, you're right. Like, to point out that Baltimore, from a perspective of how many moves can they make? How flexible are they? Baltimore's more flexible. They have more, I hate to use this word, but assets in the organization that they want to trade, a Kowser, a Westberg, whatever the case. Not that they're going to trade him, but Jackson Holiday. Their system is stacked. They're in a great spot moving forward. It's not the same spot the Jays are in because the Jays have spent on their major league roster. And so for the Jays to get to where they want to go, it's going to have to be internal to a big extent. I agree. I'm not expecting a big deadline from the Jays. Because if they are going to step it up, George Springer, 100 OPS plus.
This is a $25 million a year player. He needs to do more. Vlad Guerrero Jr., franchise player, 814 OPS. He needs to do more. Same can be said for a lot of guys on this team. Dalton Varsho, he's coming around now. They need more of that. So, you know, there are a lot of guys internally, including Kirk, including Jansen, including Biggio and Espinal, and before we even get to the pitching staff, who need to step it up if the Jays are going to get there, because it's probably going to have to be the existing team as opposed to outside help.
Benny, you're the man. Thanks for doing this today, buddy. Quick break. Let's come back. Let's do Betano Best Bet.
Sportsnet 590.
All right. It's time for your best bet brought to you by Betano Sportsbook, the 2022 Global Sports Betting Operator of the Year. Again, keep getting testimonials from you in the DMs. I really appreciate it. I love it. I love seeing the bet slips. I'm going to today do bonus Betano best bets in the podcast only part, because I actually like a couple things in the baseball world, but I'm going to the Denver Nuggets. Money line, minus 130 on Betano. I'm not screwing around. I think Jokic is that guy. I think that the Miami thing was very nice, but that he ends it tonight. Denver Nuggets money line. That is your Betano best bet. We'll see you in the podcast.
Five.
All right, podcast time. Joe's watching videos on his phone, not prepared as usual. I said I'm going to do some Betano best bet additions in here. I will, but I just... So our guy Armin hasn't figured out how to put stuff into a doc yet. And so he just, he keeps his like ideas into the emails. And I was just kind of looking one over because I'm like, what does Armin want to talk about today? First of all, I love that you put in the story about the horrendous air quality in Toronto and the thing. But Armin's question was like, seriously, how long before we're living in bubbles? Seriously, you guys. And then the next topic he shared was about what's going on in the Kardashian show. This is a tough email for Armin. I was just like, okay. And then he's like, what's your favorite athlete celebrity couple? Is what he asked as a question. So Armin, since you're such a big fan of celebrity couples, would you like to share who it is for you? Because, yeah, I don't really have an opinion on this, I got to tell you.
I got range.
Oh, yeah? I was going to say.
He has a range?
Yeah, this is great. He's like, guys, the environment and also the Kardashian show. Okay, got it.
The environment and the Kardashian show.
I didn't even know that until right now that Shakira dated PK and Lewis Hamilton. That's actually a pretty good resume for her. Like,
well, you know, the Lewis Hamilton's unconfirmed. That was literally from like this past weekend. There's some photos of them out at dinner. And stuff. So
that's why he's on the pulse.
That's why I put the question mark in the brackets.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm sorry I don't know your celebrity gossip shorthand yet on the emails. I'll get there at some point, brother. Like, I will get there at some point. Good to know. That's pretty funny. That's pretty good stuff. Yeah, I got to tell you, this is how long I've been living in the city. I don't notice how bad the air is. And I'm a UConn boy. I'm supposed to have, like, these beautiful, fresh northern lungs, and I've just been here too long now.
You've been tainted.
Where people were like, dude, the air is bad, and I went, yeah, it is. It's a problem.
Is it any different?
Yeah, I have no idea. I haven't noticed a thing. Like, you guys actually know what's going on?
Yeah, you can smell it. You can smell the smoke in the air.
Nope.
Driving in the morning, you can see it in the sky.
I can see it in the sky, but I thought yesterday was just gloomy. Like, I just thought it was a gloomy old day. Anyway.
You see the thing, too, where they're like, it's like smoking six cigarettes. It's like, okay, so what do you do afternoon?
Yeah. Oh, wow, yeah. I'm trying to get Austin to chill a little bit on the darts, on the heaters.
You see, Austin's body doesn't even feel the smoke. Sometimes, he's invincible.
Yeah. Anyway, I've tried to have a little inverage. I'm like, what did you do? I say that to him a lot. Okay, so yeah, outside of the bad air that Austin and I are not aware of, Armin is rattled about it.
Armin, he wants the bubble
life.
He's
like, guys, I want to not live in a bubble again with the celebrity couples. although that would be pretty sweet. Okay, so let's run down some things we missed. Actually, first, here are my bonus best bets on Betano Sportsbook today, okay? All right? You degenerate lovers, who I also appreciate. And yeah, send me your slips. I only want to see them if they're Betano slips. I really don't care if you bet with another book. And especially since it's kind of insulting to me, considering that I've told you that, one, I bet more than you do every single day. There's no question. There's no one that's listening to this podcast that's betting more than me or has bet for longer than I have on sports books. And I'm telling you, it's the best one that I've ever used. So every time you send me a slip, it's like, here's my other insert name. I'm like, oh, okay. Thank you for slapping me in the face. So hit me up if you want to try Betano or if you're there already. The rest of you. Anyway, Betano family only.
Yes.
So, I like a couple things tonight. One, I did this yesterday, and I should have just stuck with it. You know what screwed me up yesterday, too, when I got my best bet wrong? One is that it's the Jobo and Armin curse. Yeah. I didn't know. The two is that, yeah, the first five innings of that game, Pittsburgh had on runners four different times.
Yep.
Four different innings where they had two on with one out, and they cashed two total runs. And this was multiple times their 3-4 hitter came up. Their 3-4 hitters came up and did nothing. So, yeah, that one stung. That one hurt. But my actual best bet yesterday I didn't use because Ennis came on and was, like, blabbing away about things. And I was considering the two of them, and I was like, yeah, Ennis knows baseball. And I got all twisted up. Joe was making the video, his curse. Basically, yeah. What I'm trying to say is that me missing yesterday was not my fault at all.
Hey, I was just doing my job.
If the order of the power rankings of fault, number one, Ben, for bringing that up. Two, Armin, not saying you can't bet against an Armenian guy. That was supposed to be his one thing. Says the and I'm not saying that. The Armenian community is saying that. So,
yeah,
like, that's not even me. So, two, Armin, and then three, Joe. But Joe is, like, perpetually to blame. So, it's just kind of like he's actually also number one.
So I'm somehow two different spots.
My best day yesterday was the under of the first five between the Red Sox and Cleveland. And I moved off it, and it did hit. I at least did mention it to everybody. So, there's something. I'm going back there again tonight. BB. Crawford, first five under. I'm playing that. I'm probably going to tease it up a run so that I can do it in a little parlay. A little first five under parlay tonight. I like that one. I'm staying away from a couple of these other, like, there's stuff where you go, like, oh, Zach Wheeler against Detroit. I kind of don't like Detroit to score any runs against him, but I'm going to stay away from it. But I also like the Seattle Mariners and the Padres to go under in the first five as well. Waka is not who he used to be. He's kind of a bum. But Kirby is the man, and I just expect him to sort of shut those guys down. And then there's a little bit of a sprinkle that's going to happen for me on the Burns-Creamer Baltimore one. So those three. And, oh, man, Jack Flaherty and John Gray, too. There's a couple of good ones that, like, you can kind of sprinkle and do some teasers with those first five under parlays. With the Mariners one, I actually don't even mind you doing that, the full game parlay, just because both bullpens are decent. Same thing with potentially the under in the Guardians-Red Sox game. I like the Guardians bullpen. So, those are just a couple of things to keep a little bit of an eye out on.
Both Same of those Baltimore. Are 7.5,
yeah,
by the way.
Baltimore, too.
Yeah.
Baltimore's bullpen is just disgusting. And, yeah,
Baltimore's just a really good team.
Yeah, I know. I'm telling you, like, this is my thing with the Jays. Is like, I know everyone is thinking, man, JD, you're being so negative these days, and it's baseball, and we're just in early June, and all this different stuff, things can change. And yeah, so my opinion will change if we get new information. But as of right now, the baseball team that I've seen for the first few months of the season, it does not look nearly as good as some of the other clubs. And yeah, they could win. But I think once you start doing that, where you go, well, this is how you could win, it just... Yeah, it changes the equation for me a little bit, and especially given where the Blue Jays are at. I don't like when you think about the prospects, and Ben's right, like, who have they given away? It's not really about that. It's about how are they going to supplement this roster over the next couple of years, and I'm not really clear as to how that's going to happen. Anyways, you guys are super into superhero movies right now. I guess that's like your guys' generation thing.
Well, the new Spider-Man, the animated Spider-Man, just came out last weekend. It's called Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I have not seen it yet. I haven't had a night to go out and see it, but I'm going to see it within the next week, and I'm super excited for it. First one was really good. Were you a fan of the first one with Miles Morales? Or
yeah, I think I've even said that was the one Spider-Man movie other than the Tobey Maguire one that I really liked. Like, the rest of Spider-Man movies to me are just extremely mediocre. I could not care less. And I think that one of the most overrated movies in the history of, movies is the last one, Spideyverse.
You're talking about this one? Into the Spider-Verse?
No, this one. What was
it?
No Way Home.
No.
No Way Home, yeah.
Spider-Man No Way Home was the one that they had all three come back.
That was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Spider-Man No Way Home.
Guys say so. Because I've seen... I watched the Jake Gyllenhaal one because I love my boy Jake. All right.
Yeah.
Jake is my guy.
No, Jake is.
I'm on the record.
Goated. He's goated.
I love Jake Gyllenhaal movies. And yes, it's like he's my movie star where if he's in a movie, I go, all right.
You're watching it?
Yeah. Big Jake guy.
Yeah.
It was why I defended him to the hilt against all the wild Swifties who were like, he was older than her when they dated. I was like all you girls dating older guys? Oh, wow. She dated the older famous movie star for a couple of months. And then he broke up with her, and now he's a...
She made, like, four songs about him or something?
Shut up. leave my guy alone. Jake.
Prisoners is one of the best movies.
Yes, man. No, go through Jake's... This is why Jake is the man. Go through the resume. It's just... It's bulletproof. It's just hit after hit after hit.
Yeah.
Where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. Spider-Man. I watched one of the Spider-Man movies because he was in it, because I support my boy.
Yeah.
And it was one of the worst pieces of trash movies I've ever seen. I was not a fan of that one. Yeah. I thought that one was No Way Home.
No, that's Far From Home because they're in Italy. No Way Home is the one that came out 2 years ago. Or three.
Joe is correct.
Yeah, this,
on this.
All right. That's enough of this. Okay. I will say that the other one, the one after that, I wasn't going to watch it. And then everyone was freaking out nonstop, being like, it's the best one. And
the animated one.
Dude, correct. No. Everyone shut up.
Too many Spider-Mans.
Okay? The one with all the Spider-Mans, everybody was like, this one's different. This isn't like all the other Marvel movies. This one's special. There have been three good Marvel movies. Okay? Guardians of Galaxy 1.
Made a lot of people mad at that one.
Thor, the one where it's funny.
Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Ragnarok.
Funny Thor. And not even a good movie, but the opening scene in X-Men 2 where Nightcrawler pops everywhere and kills everybody in the president's office, that slapped big time in like 2003 when that came out. If you had that DVD, if you're old, you know that was like a
2003.
Holy crap, this is a sick scene. Nightcrawler popping all over the place. Those are the only good
Marvel
movies.
The blue smoke's flying everywhere. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, Deadpool's okay, but it's a little much. Anything else? Nope, they all suck. Logan sucked.
Logan sucked?
Yeah, Logan sucked. It was, oh my God.
Endgame was good because it wrapped up the Avengers, but
no, that was the worst of them all.
No, just
no, Endgame oh wasn't my the
God.
Worst.
Yes, oh my God.
No, it literally ties a bow on multiple character arcs at the same time.
I have never been more miserable at a movie theater than watching that. My friend brought me to that, and I was like, I have to see this movie. I don't know what I'm talking about. It's like 1,000 years long. And then they were like, oh, we should have just time traveled. And if we just would have time traveled. Wait a second.
It's Back to the Future.
Iron Man, yes. Sucks. It's a horrible movie. And it's way too long. It's lame. Who cares that everybody knows this now? Iron Man dies. Oh, no, not Iron Man. We would have could have used 1,000 more Iron Man movies. All those sucked. And honestly, you people that, it's not your fault. Like, you young guys, you never got real movies. You never got DVDs. Matt Damon explained it.
I had DVDs.
Matt Damon explained it. He said that when they used to have DVDs, that they could at least get a secondary market of profit off of their movies. It allowed them to make more creative projects. And now we're just stuck in the worst timeline where essentially movies are big time action blockbuster flick that's essentially a Marvel movie. And or super out art house movie where we have to be told that like The Sound of Metal is the best thing that we've ever seen. It's like, oh, great. Yeah. The Deaf Drummer. This is super. What's the other one that I watch? Nomadland, where it's like she's homeless. She lives in her van. She works at Walmart. Her life is so depressing. But sometimes someone gives her a lawn chair. And so it's about the little things. I'm like, oh, why can't we have a middle ground? That's why horror
someone
movies.
Gives her a lawn chair.
It's like, that's
that's the most depressing description.
Frances McDormand is getting a lawn chair for 3 hours sitting in a lawn chair. And having her life fall apart. And it's not fun. There's nothing fun. All right. Movies stink. That's why TV is where it's at right now.
Like, were you a fan of, like, the Batman that came out recently?
No,
like the
that
new
sucked,
one?
Too. Oh, that was brutal.
What?
I hated the emo Batman.
It was emo Batman.
I'm going to put on my face paint. I'm going to go out there and show you guys. No, that one was so stupid, too. It was like, all the politicians are dying out front of the one same place. How will we ever crack the case? And then he's like, what if I hang out here for one whole night?
Like MSG like, floods.
Oh, yeah, he cracked the case. Oh, yeah, actually, he's taken all the pictures from the one spot in the thing. Nah, sucked. It's crap. There was some other stupid stuff about that Batman, but I also blocked it out. I don't care. It was cool hearing the Nirvana, though. The something.
Dude, that song. Like, yeah, that was. Oh, my goodness. That I heard that.
It, without that song, that movie's a 4.6 out of 10.
Wow.
With that song.
Armin and Austin, do you guys rate it a 4.6? Because I'm way higher than that.
Yeah, yeah, no, Joe, it's way higher.
Yeah.
I honestly don't even watch him, so.
Okay, Armin. Armin's just
Joker.
Not even here.
I like Joker, though. Armin, 2019 Joker.
Back up on the rankings. Armin coming through for
he
the
saved
team.
Himself.
Yes, big move by Armin. I can totally see Austin just hacking darts, watching Marvel movies, being like, man, this is it with the cannon.
No, I could see Austin yeah. being a villain in a Batman movie.
Well, yeah, he's the Riddler.
He is. That's messed up, and this might have to go to HR from here on out.
No. Buddy, you think you're a hero in the Batman movies?
You think you're
Austin,
a hero in the Batman movies?
Yeah, Austin, definitely. The villains are like the coolest parts of superhero movies. Like,
yeah.
Someone told me I was a villain, I'd be honored.
No.
I'm the farthest Joe, thing from a villain.
Joe though. Is clearly Robin.
I'm a like, side character.
Joe is Robin. Like, there's just no doubt yeah. about it. Like,
if you're I'm our Batman, Gotham is in trouble.
If I'm our Batman? What
yes,
do you mean
sir.
If? I am a Gotham is in trouble. That's why you're the villain, is because you're like, I can't believe he's Batman. Yeah, play my song. Yeah, play my song. Anyway, yeah, I don't really care for superhero movies. They're just whatever. They're it's fine. It's just like if you want to sit there and watch something where you know exactly what's going to happen beat by beat essentially throughout the entire film, then fine. Just because they made Batman darker doesn't make it cool. The first I wasn't counting. I said Marvel movies, but
DC now.
Yeah, the other DC movies,
the Christian Bale Batman ones.
Those were sick. Dark like Knight I love series. All those. Yeah, those were awesome.
Heath Ledger.
Yeah, but even the ones without Heath, like the first Batman movie with Liam Neeson was a good one too.
Yeah, and then the third one that had Scarecrow.
Bane. Yeah, my
and,
guy.
Oh,
other...
Bane, and then Scarecrow is in the second one as well. Cillian Murphy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, I like Tom Hardy a lot. Tom Hardy and Jake Gyllenhaal are in the same pantheon of guys where I'm like, I love these bros.
Yeah,
these guys are
he, like,
so
climbs
cool.
out of like the pit.
And that guy, what's the guy from Walking Dead?
Rick, the guy Bear who played Rick Grimes?
No,
or
Jay Baruchel is a different guy.
John Bernthal.
Yeah.
John Bernthal.
That guy, too.
Yeah.
Those
he's
are
sick.
JD's top three crush movie star guys that he'll watch the movies that they're in. Those are the three. Bernthal, Gyllenhaal.
Hardy. There you
top
go.
Top three.
If you had to make a Mount Rushmore, who's number four?
Well, if it was a Mount Rushmore, it would be different. I'm talking about right now. Brad Pitt is the GOAT.
Oh, true. I mean, like, your personal Mount Rushmore of guys that you were
right now?
Watching.
Yeah, well, I guess Pitt's still working. So, Pitt, yeah. I'll throw Pitt up in
the... Brad Pitt is the GOAT?
I love Brad Pitt.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Great
perfect
movie.
Mix of hot and cool. Brad Pitt is... Man, you want to talk about resumes? Go through Brad Pitt's resume.
We've done this before on this show.
Go through Brad Pitt's resume. Like, if we're talking about all time, man, I loved Bruce Willis so much when I was growing up. I was a huge Bruce guy. I've also been a Leo guy. I've been a Leo stan for forever. Again, people are like, why does he date all these young, hot models? As if any guy wouldn't do the exact same thing he does in his position. Like, in fact, everybody should thank Leo because he's actually doing the thing. He's going, I'm not doing stupid stuff out here, guys. I'm not marrying someone who's age appropriate and being like the rest of you. I'm Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, if you ever wondered what life could be like if you were a famous hot movie star, this is it. And he shows us all that dreams can come true. So, yeah, awesome. Shout out to him, the man, the GOAT. The other
I'm sure
GOAT.
He's listening right now.
Yeah.
Dude. Shout out to Leo.
Leo is the best. I love Leo. So, yeah, those are the guys. Yeah, those are the guys. Yeah, what am I supposed to say? Like, no, Daniel Day-Lewis is the GOAT. He did four movies his whole career. I love Daniel Day, too.
Yeah.
There Will Be Blood is one of my favorite movies. So is Gangs of New York. But, yeah, you can't give the GOAT status to the guy with four movies, and one of them is Lincoln that no one watched.
All four of those guys have, like, movies. Like,
an entire
catalog.
Okay, this was a discombobulated one about movies. Anyway, yeah, the Batman movie being delayed, I don't care, with the writer strike. I hope the writers win. I hope that AI, the machines, don't win.
You care about Ted Lasso?
Yeah, Robert Pattinson as a Batman choice. And then the funniest thing with Robert Pattinson when he was Batman choice was, like, there was an article where He was like, I don't want to get in shape for this. It's really hard to be Batman. It's like, you get to be Batman.
You're a superhero.
Just go to the gym. You crybaby Gen Z.
Not to mention he has access to
Twilight,
like.
Twilight guy. They gave him the eye makeup.
Access to like the best trainers, the best food. Like, it's a.
Yeah.
It's not like it's a difficult thing.
Of course. For a guy. That's why, you know who's the other guy who's awesome, who's actually also in my Mount Rushmore?
Mm.
Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
Current guys, crushes. Michael B. Jordan got to be Creed, and he got the Creed body, and he was like, I'm not doing anything that doesn't involve me being the Creed body anymore.
Yeah. He's just jacked in every movie.
As he should be, man. Yeah. If I could look like one guy, I would look like Michael B. Jordan. No question. Right now? No question. Like, yeah. Not even a hesitation. They'd be like, who would you like to look at? Michael B. Jordan! I'd snap that answer out so fast. That was what was so funny about him in the new Creed movie with, what was the other guy's name that was like accused and then possibly falsely accused?
Jonathan Majors. Jonathan Majors.
People were like, who's the hotter of the two of these guys? I was like,
Michael B. Jordan. What are you talking about?
Come on. I was like, listen, man. You're a good-looking guy, Jonathan B. Majors, but let's not be
disrespectful.
Yes, yeah. But you're the B squad. Yeah, Jonathan Majors. Come on, man. You compared to Michael B. Jordan is an outrageous take. Anyways, this is a ludicrous opinion for people to have. Anyways, all right. That was actors who are hot and Armin's thoughts on Kardashians this week and the bad air. Yeah. Now that you mentioned the bad air, though, I think I have more boogers than normal.
Okay.
Yeah, like bad air.
I mean, it's probably some,
I feel a little congested.
There.
You guys looked at me like that's crazy. Like, I'm saying,
I just wasn't expecting.
I'm booged
that.
Up. I'm booged
You're
up.
Booked up.
Yeah, I'm booged up from the bad air. I gotta go blow my nose. All right, subscribe to this podcast, leave 5 stars, do all those nice things, and we will talk to you tomorrow with some post game from some NBA.